case, Garst versus Lockheed, Ms. Tancredi. Mr. Tancredi, sorry.
May it please the court, I'm Nick Tancredi on behalf of appellant. Your Honor, prior to responding to any need for clarification or questions by the court, there are three short points I'd like to make. First of all, Your Honor, we're blessed in this case with a number of acronyms. In preparing for today, I noted that on page 30 of our principal brief, we included one acronym that we failed to define, that's LTD, and it stands for Live Test Demonstration. The second point, Your Honor, in our arguments, we refer to the concept of implied certifications. It was recently pointed out to me that using the term implied certification actually underrates the performance of the drafters of the Nueva contract and the drafters of the statute, the Byrd Amendment. We believe, Your Honor, that the provisions of both the contract and the statute act in such a way as to effectively form an imputed certification.
Well, look, could you point to a paragraph in the complaint that, look at your Third Amendment complaint, that you think, you know, adequately complies with Rule 9, completing fraud?
If I might have just a moment, Your Honor. Your Honor, I specifically direct the court's attention to our representations concerning the OANMM LAN-WAN false or fraudulent claims, Your Honor, where we refer to...
What does that mean concretely?
Where is this?
Where is this in...
In your complaint.
I'm looking at... Page 47, Your Honor.
Right, that's your best, clearest, crispest allegation of fraud.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that our treatment of the OANMM LAN-WAN program clearly states that there were, and starting at paragraph 141, and proceeding clearly states that there were contractual requirements to provide specific technical specifications, that Lockheed represented that those were provided when in fact they were not, and that subsequent claims were presented. And we specifically identify on paragraph 177 as one example, and actually starting at 175, efforts to obtain $1.3 million for work which Lockheed knew did not comport with required contract specifications. So we would point to paragraphs 175 through 183, Your Honor.
Well, I don't understand. I'm lost. Say, for example, 176, plaintiff relator's complaints intensified the pressure upon Lockheed to implement a WAN.
It's a wide area network, Your Honor.
Well, intensifying pressure, what does that have to do with fraud?
Well, they did that, Your Honor, by undue influence, by engaging the former acting secretary, Anthony Principi. They engaged him in an illegal consulting contract in September of 1993, which is the same month...
With fraud. But what Judge Posner is asking, look, my principal question was, too, is what is the clearest example in your complaint of a representation to the United States that A is true when not A is true?
I think the clearest representation, Your Honor, is the request for $1.3 million for the OANMM Lan-Wan project, which they could not...
Well, is a request a representation? Is that your argument?
The
representation... You seem to think that to bill someone, say for a defective product or something, that the bill itself is a fraud. Is that your theory?
No, not at all, Your Honor. There were representations made in obtaining this contract that Lockheed would provide pre-proven, pre-tested technology that would meet various
technical... Now, when they made that representation, did they know that it was false?
Yes, Your Honor.
And where do you allege that, that they knowingly made a false representation? In other words, how do we distinguish your fraud case from just a breach of contract case?
Exhibit 45, Your Honor.
No, forget Exhibit 45. I'm interested in the... Look, you drove the judge crazy, right? So now the question is, should he have been more patient with you? And it would help me if you could point to a paragraph in your complaint where you clearly allege that Lockheed knowingly made a false representation. It ought to be the simplest thing in the world to allege fraud. You say that on X date, Lockheed knowingly made the following false representation. Then you've complied with Rule 9. Now, what would be a paragraph where I could see that? Or where Judge Grady could have seen it?
You know, I would go back to... the paragraphs I cited again, starting at paragraph 175, that they made these representations when they knew that they could not meet the technical specifications.
But there's no statement in 175 about a knowingly false representation.
I direct the court's attention to 184A. Lockheed's statement of the reason for the OANMM Lan-Wan installation was unknown or undetermined.
Well, what does that mean? What does it mean for a statement to be unknown?
That they didn't know the reason why the system would work, when in fact they did know and had known by their own internal memos since 1992 that the configuration that they proffered could not and would not meet the technical specifications of the contract, Your Honor.
To some extent you're relying on certifications, I gather, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. And if you look in the more definite statement, particularly Exhibits 19 and Exhibits 21 to 23, you see that the contract required that Lockheed would independently verify that their components would work to technical specifications prior to invoicing being made.
Is that a certification?
Yes, Your Honor, we feel that it is, by operation of law.
But that's just a claim that breach of contract equals fraud.
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. There is an implied...
A fraud would be you made a promise at time T intending not to keep it.
Absolutely.
Not that you made a promise and didn't keep it.
They made a promise that this was pre-proven technology, Your Honor, when in fact it wasn't.
And where is that alleged?
That is alleged throughout our more definite statement, Your Honor. And
does the Byrd Amendment require certification? Is that
yes, Your Honor. It required that anyone who obtained a government contract either submit a declaration that it would not use appropriated funds or would file a notice of who is to be the lobbyist. I note that I'm out of time, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Grady. Mr. Buckman?
May it please the Court, Josh Bookman on behalf of the defendants. False Claims Act is not an omnibus enforcement device for breach of contract. It is not an enforcement device even for knowing breach of contract or even for allegedly fraudulent conduct if that conduct does not involve the submission of a false claim for payment. The complaint in this case is an attempt to misuse the False Claims Act to seek redress for allegations that a government contractor has not lived up to the standards and specifications of a contract. There is law out there that is intended to address situations
but
like that.
But scattered throughout this complaint is, and a more definite statement, there are charges that Lockheed submitted bills knowing that they had not performed their obligations. Isn't that a false claim?
There are allegations that Lockheed billed knowing that it had not lived up to the contract
right.
specifications. What we are missing here and what was frustrating Judge Grady so much is that we did not have any connection between the allegations, the general allegations of fraud, which basically took the form of you billed us for something that didn't work. We didn't have any connection between those general allegations and the specific claim for payment. So Lockheed wasn't able to take a look at that claim and say, okay, this claim includes a certain number of dollars for services, for hardware, for software, and things like that. And how is it that the plaintiff is claiming that we did not provide that? Those two aspects of the case were never matched up. The complaint was 345 paragraphs long. The first 301 paragraphs are general factual allegations with various allegations of claims sprinkled throughout the whole 300 paragraphs. And then each
just looking at random at the at his more definite states, I'm looking
yes.
at page 16, paragraph 8. Lockheed's claims submitted by Severson are also false because Lockheed knew that SSDS lacked expertise in the NOAVA solution.
Yes. There are no claims identified anywhere in the Third Amendment complaint that I can tell from looking at every piece of paper filed by the plaintiffs in this case in which Lockheed billed the government for a certain amount of SSDS labor such that the inadequacy of SSDS efforts would be false. And again, there's no allegation that SSDS didn't provide the services. The allegation is the services weren't good enough. And that's not a false claim. Liability under the False Claims Act attaches to
well,
the request
okay,
for payment.
Well, okay, I'll look at another one.
Right.
I'm looking at page 17, paragraph 19. Lockheed falsely stated in a January 15, 1993 letter from James Jansen to Larry Flagg. Okay, so now you have your specified letter that PCNFS release 3.5, et cetera, met all the mandatory requirements. This statement was false because of these five things. Now,
correct. What we're missing here is a claim for payment, Judge. We have all kinds of allegations that false statements were made by Lockheed regarding how well this contract was working. Matter of fact, we also have back and forth between Lockheed and the VA acknowledging the problems with the contract, compromising them, deciding what the VA was going to pay in light of these problems. We don't have a claim in which these five things were billed for, Your Honor. That's what we don't have.
Well, he does make a reference somewhere to a $2.3 million claim.
But the $2.5 million claim.
$2.5 million?
Right. That's actually the first one in the more definite statement, and that is the overall charge that Lockheed and the government agreed that the VA would pay for providing this OANMM WAN system, which essentially is a computer operating system, Your Honor.
Oh, that was the total?
That's the total, and every other claim that is identified in particular in the more definite statement is a
right.
subset of that $2.5 million. They're not separate claims. The $1.3 million that Mr. Tancredi talked about is approximately half of the $2.5 million. It's part of it.
Required certifications, like you're in compliance with the Byrd Amendment and so on. I don't know whether you were or you weren't, but
right.
is there anything wrong with that as an allegation in a complaint?
Yes, first of all, the problem is there is no implied certification of compliance with the Ethics Act or the Byrd Amendment in any case cited by the plaintiff. And, as a matter of fact, the cases that do talk about implied certification only imply certification with compliance with a particular law or regulation when such compliance is a prerequisite to payment. A good example would be complying with that you're or
well,
certifying
isn't
it.
Isn't that the case here, or isn't it?
No, it's not the case here. There is no prerequisite in the contract or anywhere else for payment under this contract that there be compliance with the Ethics Act or the Byrd Amendment. Different from the Medicare context where you, in fact, must comply with the anti-kickback statute in order to be eligible to submit claims for payment to Medicare. That's where the implied certification issue arises, not in a case like this. There is no question that this was a difficult contract to administer. It required Lockheed to provide all the VA's office automation requirements for a period of 5 years in a rapidly changing technology market. But the allegations in this complaint, especially as clarified or as supplemented by the exhibits that the plaintiff attaches to his complaint, shows that both parties did their best to fulfill their obligations. Problems were acknowledged by the parties, attempts were made to work them out, and the claims submitted to the VA by Lockheed were negotiated in light of those problems. The plaintiff has failed to plead a legally valid false claim because there were none. For these reasons,
Did the district judge dismiss the case because he didn't think they had alleged a violation or the sanction for this confusing pleading?
It was not a sanction. There were two reasons, actually, but sanction was neither one of them. The first was there was not sufficient particularity with respect to any particular claim for payment. In other words, it wasn't connected to the fraudulent allegations in a way that would enable the defendant to defend, Rule 9. And the second one was Rule 8, which is it is impossible for this case to proceed on an orderly basis.
Well, that's what I meant by a sanction.
Okay, then that was the second reason, Your Honor.
As opposed to a ruling on the False Claim Act, yeah.
Correct. That was the second independent basis.
I don't think I've seen a case in which a suit was actually dismissed because the complaint was long and confusing. Is this a recognized basis for...
I think we did cite some cases in our brief, Your Honor, where Rule 8 was used as a basis to dismiss the complaint. I'm not sure long and confusing is the only reason under Rule 8 that was driving Judge Grady.
Common law jurisprudence that complaints exceeding 100 pages or 250 paragraphs don't have to be read. The Third Circuit actually said that once on bank.
Judge Grady was frustrated because he very clearly told the plaintiff what to do after he got the Third Amendment complaint. He said, take each claim and tell me why each one is false. And he underlined the word why in his order to Mr. Tancredi. And what we get is a more definite statement which still separates the claims that are supposedly false from the fraudulent allegations and says all those fraudulent allegations apply to all these claims. And that's what I believe led to the dismissal under Rule 8. If I have no further questions, I'll stand on my argument. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Buckman. Mr. Tancredi, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Your Honor, to answer your previous question, I would direct your attention to paragraph 280 and 281. Your Honor, our complaint is intelligible. It certainly can be improved, but it does put defendant on clear notice, on fair notice as to the claims alleged. Consistent with the rulings of this court in Davis versus Ruby Food and Bennett v. Schmidt, we feel that we've satisfied pleading requirements on Rule 8. Opponent conceded Rule 9 in front of the court on March 20th, 2002. We urge the court to consider the strong interest in justice in this case and to evaluate our position in light of Rule 8F to do substantial justice. There are certainly a number of other actions that could have been taken here, Your Honor, short of dismissing the entire complaint in its entirety. Any surplusage certainly could have been stricken.
Okay, thank you very much to both parties.